This is Pure Decking, show number 561 for Thursday, March the 2nd, 1933. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and giving bad electrical wiring advice. Tonight, we have a madman. What's up, madman?
Nothing much. Just figuring out how to start an electrical fire in case I ever need to commit insurance fraud. I meant, yeah, exactly what I said, in case I ever need to commit fraud. But good news, Geico was willing to sell me renter's insurance for it.
So, for purposes of starting the electrical fire for insurance fraud, you want to mask the source of it. So what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to identify an outlet that's in a nice central location of the home, open it up, and loosen the terminal screws just a little bit. Not enough for the wires to fall out, just enough to make a bad connection. Then you're going to want to run a power strip with a couple of space heaters on it on that particular strip or other equivalent large load. The loose connections on the terminals will create a high resistance, and that's the spot that'll heat up and most likely ignite the drywall. Well, the paper coating on drywall, you know what I mean. Anyways, so that's, you know, insurance fraud 101. And tonight we have an RU.
I just like to say I disavow.
Yeah, somebody who worked in the trades, you're listening to me going, you fucker. What's the meme, you tense motherfucker?
Oh, that does beat my plan of duct taping one of my breakers in position while I'm making a frozen pizza, nuking some lo mein, and doing laundry.
See, the problem with duct taping the breaker open is, whereas, yes, the duct tape would theoretically burn in the fire, it'll leave a residue, so the fire department will be able to determine that the cause of fire was an electrical fire caused by homeowner stupidity in that you duct taped a breaker open.
I want nothing to do with this conspiracy to commit fraud against Geico.
I never said that I was going to go with them. I just said they offered me a very good rate.
Oh, for some reason, I can't seem to get into the IRC tonight. It's just spinning. So, don't know what's up with that.
I would duct tape the breaker open.
So, it's going to be fine so long as they don't open their freezer to get the fridge to get a beer.
For the record, don't go loosening the screws in your electrical terminals. I guess you could do it to somebody you don't love. No, don't do that either. That's arson. It's rather convoluted and roundabout arson, but it's still arson. Okay, well, I guess we're not getting into the IRC tonight. I don't know what's going on there. Shit. I got nothing. I don't know. Before we do news stories, you guys have anything?
No, I'm pretty good. Well, I just got into the IRC.
Okay, well, it must just be me. I was having a TeamSpeak issue earlier, so I kicked the VPN on. Maybe the VPN's blocked. So, I don't know. Anyways, I guess we'll start off with, I'll just let it spin, see if it ever eventually connects. We'll start off with this one. It's from PCMag.com. A pair of U.S. senators have discovered that 8 automakers will give users location data to police without requiring a court-issued warrant. Senator Ron Wyden and Ed Markey publicized the finding in a Tuesday letter that urged the Federal Trade Commission to investigate the carmakers BMW, Kia, Mazda, Mercedes-Benz, Nissan, Subaru, Toyota, and Volkswagen. The senators alleged companies, quote, deceptively pledged that they would insist on warrants or other court orders before turning over location data, unquote. from customers to police. In 2014, the auto industry pledged to uphold privacy principles, which included only handing over such sensitive location data to law enforcement when a warrant or court-issued order was provided. However, when an investigation by Wyden & Markey finds that only six car companies, Ford, GM, Honda, Stellantis, I don't know that one, and Tesla, and to a lesser extent Hyundai, require police to submit a warrant when requesting users' location data. Of the six, Tesla is the only one with a policy of telling customers about legal demands unless the company has received a judicial gag order. So now, let's just stop and think about what the story is saying. All of these automakers are collecting your location data from your car. The article is about which ones require the police to get a warrant before they share it. It's not a question of are they collecting your location data. They are. It's do they need a warrant to share it with the cops. And I like the warrant. I like the idea of, you know, if you're going to collect data, you know, from a company, you need a warrant to do it. I think that's a fair requirement. I don't think that's a problem. I mean, I kind of understand why companies don't want the headache of doing it and just say, well, cops are asking, we're going to comply with the cops. And I get it. But, you know, the conceptually, the idea of a warrant being required before you pull the user's data, whether it's from a company or from, you know, something of the users on their own, seems like a good one. But why does Ford, GM, Mercedes, Hyundai need your location data? What are they going to do with that data? They have no practical reason to collect it. The only reason to collect it is to sell it.
Not just to sell it, but they use it to determine diagnostics on their engines. How often do you need to do maintenance on certain road conditions? Because the whole you need to travel so many thousand miles before you get a tune-up, that's a guess, and it varies depending on what type of road conditions you're putting your car through, what type of driving you're doing on your if you're going within city limits and rarely going above 45 miles an hour, you're going to get a much longer lifespan on your car than if you're someone like me that likes to drive 120 as often as possible. So they can have reasons for collecting sensor data on your car and engine performance and where you are, just so they know the road conditions up against. But the main reason they're collecting it is all of them have been selling their own version of OnStar, which for it to function, cops to know where to send the ambulance or where to send the cops when you're carjacked, know where your car is. So it's more than just selling it. But my issue is you need to determine who owns the data. Person collecting it or the person generating it? Because right now it sounds like Tesla is deciding the person generating it owns the data, so you need a warrant. And the companies that are just handing it over have decided the individuals collecting it own the data, so they don't need a warrant.
Well, that is one thing Europe got right with the GDPR, is the person generating the data is generally assumed to own it. Just as a pure concept. Now, their implementation, we could argue about. But as a concept, I agree with the idea that the person generating the data owns it, not the company that collects it. For the most part, yeah, I could see an argument where, you know, the companies, if the data is being generated within the company's product as a requirement for the service being provided, I could see an argument being made there about it being some kind of a joint thing. But generally, when it's just pure data collection because they can, I would say the thing generating the data should be considered the owner. And there's precedent for that. You know, look at copyright. You know, it's not the first person to publish a book that owns it. It's the first person to write the book that owns it. At least in just general purpose copyright. Trademark's a little different. You got to register the trademark to get it, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, the eight other automakers will turn over location data to government agencies, quote, with a mere subpoena, which does not require a judge's review and approval, unquote. Senators write the FTC. Quote, these companies are not just less protective of their customers' privacy, their policies directly contradict the public commitment the companies made and invited the FTC to enforce. As such, these companies may have engaged in deceptive conduct, which is prohibited by Section 5 of the FTC Act, unquote, the senators allege. I love how they're like, well, it directly contradicts their public statements. They may have made deceptive. I know it's because they're saying it from a legal point of view, not common language, but it sounds really dumb to say it the way they said it. It's like, you told a fat lie. That might be being deceptive. Although law enforcement is likely still requesting location data to help them with criminal investigations, the senators say such sensitive data deserves appropriate privacy protections to stamp out potential for spying abuses. Quote, vehicle location data can be used to identify Americans who have traveled to seek an abortion in another state, attend protests, support groups for alcohol, drugs, or other types of addiction, or identify those of particular faiths as revealed through trips to places of worship, unquote, the senators note. Interesting the order they put those in. I'll let you read into that whatever you will. Another concern is that hackers or foreign spies could access the same location data from today's connected cars and snoop on customers. The senator's letter says Hyundai, quote, routinely collects and retains vehicle location data for up to 15 years, Toyota for up to 10, and Honda for at least 7. The FTC didn't immediately respond to a request for comment, but the letter from Wyden and Markey arrives amid growing scrutiny over today's connected cars. In March, the New York Times found that car makers have also been sharing users' driving behaviors with insurance companies, sometimes without consumers' consent or awareness. And I think that would be the other thing, is how many people are aware that their car is collecting this information on them? Like, I specifically went in and turned as much of it off as I could in the car. And this raises the great, wonderful question, does that switch actually do anything? Because, yeah, it gives you a little thing saying, you know, share your data with Ford, right? And it's like, no. So I flip it off. But when they check on a lot of these websites, those switches don't do anything. They're like the buttons on crosswalks. Half of them don't do anything. They're just there so you feel better.
But it does something. It turns that little light off.
So I wonder sometimes, because if you're looking at it from a pure profit motive, what makes the most sense? Dealing with people who don't want their data collected, or giving them a placebo switch, or respecting it and actually not making as much money as you could? Which one do you think makes the most sense from a company perspective?
If we enforced our laws, giving them the option to opt out because the placebo switch is illegal. Since we don't,
the placebo
switch.
Yeah.
But I think the senators, they're looking at too narrow a version of the problem. Like I stated before, and you said the Europeans may have gotten it right, the problem isn't just with the automakers, cell phones, it's everyone that's collecting data. The law stating data is owned by the person that generates it. Not sell it, you cannot give it away without the express written consent of the individual generating the data. And I don't think e-sign should work. When I say express written consent, I mean a paper fucking contract. Signed and notarized.
With a fucking quill. Or at least a fountain pen.
Yeah. That way, these people, they might not have read the contract, but they're being forced to jump through enough hoops that they should know that they need to read the contract. At that point, it becomes willful blindness if you just sign it and hand it over. And you can't fix willful blindness.
So
you can't fix companies taking advantage of ignorance.
Completely off topic, but I was, I just found something tucked up under one of the risers on my desk, and it's my old PSP. And I think the screen is cracked. It's got a little nick at the bottom of it that looks like something heavy must have sat on it for a minute, because it's might be cracked. It also has no charge because it's not coming on. I don't know where the fucking cable for it is. So.
Oh, I see a project in your future. buying a screen and replacing the PSP screen.
I don't know if it's worth fixing it, though. These days, an emulator does as good a job. Although, it might be worth it gutting the case and putting, like, a Raspi or something in it, so... I'll just set that back down for now. Sorry, was completely distracted by that for a moment. Because, you know, Madman, you say that, like, I don't have enough projects. So...
I didn't say it was a project you would ever do.
Oh, well. So, continuing on with the automakers, this next one's from Ars Technica. It is kind of interesting. AM radio law opposed by tech and auto industries is close to passing. A controversial bill that would require all new cars to be fitted with AM radios looks set to become law in the near future. Yesterday, Senator Edward Markey, this guy again, this motherfucker, revealed that the, quote, AM radio for every vehicle act, unquote, now has the support of 60 U.S. senators as well as 246 co-sponsors in the House of Representatives, making its passage almost a sure thing. Should that happen, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration would be required to ensure that all new cars sold in the U.S. had AM radios at no extra cost. Quote, Democrats and Republicans are tuning into the millions of listeners, thousands of broadcasts, and countless emergency management officials who depend on AM radio in their vehicles. AM radio is a lifeline for people in every corner of the United States to get news, sports, local updates, and times of emergencies. Our common sense bill makes this fundamental essential tool, make sure this fundamental essential tool doesn't get lost on the dial. With a filibuster-proof supermajority in the Senate, Congress should quickly take it up and pass it, unquote, said Senator Markey and his co-sponsor Ted Cruz. But 82 million people still listen to AM radio, according to National Association of Broadcasters, which was rather pleased with congressional support. Quote, broadcasters are grateful for the overwhelming... Okay, this is not why they want to pass it, but... bipartisan support for AM radio and every vehicle act in both chambers of Congress, unquote, said NAB... President and CEO Curtis Legate, quote, this majority endorsement reaffirms lawmakers' recognition of the essential service AM radio provides the American people, particularly in emergency situations. NAB thanks the 307 members of Congress who are reinforcing the importance of maintaining universal access to this crucial public communications medium, unquote. So, there's more to this article. We'll get to it in a minute. Literally, they're wanting to mandate an AM radio in every vehicle. And I'm not certain... And you understand, I do ham radio, so I get the point. But I'm almost wanting to make a joke of, is this more of an indication of the average age of the people in Congress? Or is this... or are they actually considering this? Because the reason they want this in here is not for fucking talk radio.
What I understand is electric cars fuck with the AM reception.
A lot of them, yeah, they do.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
And a lot of our emergency notification systems, AM is like the major one that they dump tons of money into maintaining AM emergency communications so that they can do emergency broadcasts and stuff like that. If you look into the systems, cause you know, yeah, it'll makes everybody's cell phone go off, but, and your TVs and things like that, but AM radio is always kind of like the baseline, the last line of making sure everyone could get an emergency broadcast. You know, if the Sharknado is coming and nothing else is working, supposedly you can still always turn on an AM radio and hear the emergency broadcasts, right? That's kind of how that's set up. And if you look into it, they spend a ton of money on some of these AM radio stations with huge government grants to basically run entire second sets of equipment on, you know, with emergency power and connection to the emergency systems and just all this stuff thrown at these AM radio stations to make sure that, you know, they can run for something like 72 hours without power and still be able to get the emergency broadcasts out and connect into the emergency systems. So I get why they want to make sure that the cars still have the AM radios in them, because they do put a lot of money into that, into the emergency notification system. So, anyways, there's a reason there's even a bill in Congress to mandate AM radios in all new vehicles is that some automakers have begun to drop the option, particularly in electric vehicles. A big reason for that is the electromagnetic interference from the electric motors. Rather than risk customer complaints from poor quality audio, some automakers decided to remove it. But it's not exclusively an EV issue. Late last year, we learned that the revised Ford Mustang Coupe would also arrive sans AM radio, which Ford told us was because the radio stations were modernizing by, quote, offering internet streaming through mobile apps, FM, digital, and satellite radio options, unquote, and that it would continue to offer those other audio options in its vehicles. In response to congressional questioning, 8 automakers told a Senate committee that they were quitting AM. BMW, Ford, Mazda, Polestar, Rivian, Tesla, Volkswagen, and Volvo. It's interesting that they pulled the guy from Rivian in, because isn't that like, isn't Rivian like really small? I know that they've got some EVs that are pretty popular, but I didn't think Rivian was that big of a player. This quote undetermined, or this quote undermined the Federal Emergency Management Agency system for delivering its critical public safety information to the public, unquote. Said Senator Markey's office last year, and AM radio's role as a platform for delivering emergency alerts to the public is given by supporters of the legislation as perhaps the key reason for its necessity. But critics of the bill, including Consumer Technology Association, don't buy that argument. In October of 2023, FEMA and Federal Communications Commission introduced a nationwide test of the emergency alert system. According to CTA, which surveyed 800 U.S. adults, of the 95% of U.S. adults that heard the test, only 6% did so via radio, and just 1% on the AM radio specifically. Instead, 92% received the alert pushed to their smartphone. Quote, requiring the installation of analog FM radios in automobiles is an unnecessary action that would impact EV range, efficient... Okay, it's not... An AM radio draws nothing to run the amps. It's not going to affect the fucking range. Efficiency and affordability of a critical, at a critical moment of accelerating adoption, unquote, said Albert Gore, executive director of ZETA. I wonder if that's, they specifically said Albert Gore instead of Al Gore, so you didn't think it was the other guy.
Possibly.
I think that, and I think it's also bullshit when they're saying it's going to raise the cost of any car.
An AM radio chip costs like 2 cents.
Well, I was thinking you would have to, I think you would need to specially order a radio not to have an AM in it. I've never seen a straight FM radio.
Considering you can make an AM radio from a couple of coils, a wire, and a diode, I mean... They're not
exactly.
You don't
even need a battery.
Yeah, well, yeah. So, quote, mandating AM radio would do little to expand drivers' ability to receive emergency alerts at a time when we are more connected than ever. We encourage Congress to allow manufacturers to innovate and produce designs that meet consumer preference rather than pushing a specific communications technology, unquote, Gore said in a statement. You know, I kind of get both sides of the argument, because on one hand, yeah, the government picking winners or losers in technology has not always got great outcomes. So the reason seatbelts haven't changed in 40 years is also basically this, a similar rule. But at the same time, communications technology only works when everyone uses the same one, or at least everyone you want to talk to uses the same one. So if they are going to invest this much in this, you know, massive emergency broadcast system, I get why they want to make sure everyone's got at least got the option for the AM to be there. You know, I mean, I get it. And their arguments about the cost are stupid. And AM, usually a radio chip is going to be an integrated circuit. It's going to have AM and FM already built into it, and it's going to cost pennies. It'll need some support logic, a power source, and an antenna, and probably a tuner circuit. But that's it. I mean, come on. You're talking about okay, when they used to give away radios and vending machines and you could, you know, they were like part of watches and shit like that, you can't tell me it's due to cost. You just can't. Now, Aryu had the right point in that a lot of the EVs, they don't shield the EMI from the motor all that well inside, and AM radio is particularly sensitive to EMI. So I think that's probably
it's the whole issue. That's the whole issue. They don't want to solve that problem. Because why wouldn't you give your customer something extra that costs next to nothing?
Well, because shielding the EMI of one of them electric motors probably means building essentially a Faraday cage and doing a around the engine compartment. And you can't exactly ground it, so I guess you'd have to ground it to the chassis? No.
You would have to somehow
isolate the AM radio from the rest of the engine, from the engine noise. So it would need its own negative line. The radio would require its own battery to be isolated from the EMI of the car, and you'd have to put the radio receiver in a Faraday cage, I think, because I don't think you could do the engine. Huh. That's actually an interesting problem.
I'm not electrically minded, so I wouldn't even know where to start. I mean, I just know that's the overall problem.
Is that
they don't want to fix it.
You could wrap all the wires going to and from the radio receiver in a shit ton of ferrite beads. That might do it.
Here's the next solution. Stop mandating EVs and just let them sell their cars with a crappy AM radio, and people that don't want to listen to the crappy AM radio won't.
Ah, there you go. So, and I did finally make it into the IRC there. I don't know what was going on there. Yeah, I don't much like the government picking, but I kind of get it with communications technologies that you do kind of have to make sure everyone's at least moderately on the same page for it to work. But at the same time,
whenever I hear a politician complaining about government picking, I have to look to see what mandates have you been for? Because so many of them don't have a problem with the government picking. It's just they don't want the government to pick that particular winner. Now, don't get me wrong. Some politicians are against all of it, and they have principles. I'm cool with that. And the others, like, it's our job. We're going to tell you what to do. I think those guys are evil, but at least they're principled when they're evil. They're lawful evil. The most respectable flavor of evil.
It is the hardest to play.
But I wonder on these tests, have we ever looked to see how robust the other forms of communication are?
Well,
like, how hard is it to take down the cell phone network?
It's not. So, the thing with the cell phone network compared to AM broadcast, cell phones largely operate in upper FM bands, and their range is not nearly what the range of a high power AM broadcast is, right? And that's fine. Normally you have enough cell sites scattered throughout, you know, your area that it covers pretty much where you want to go. But, you know, even today it's still a meme of, oh, no cell phone signal. You know, I've got family in the hospital right now and it's hit or miss whether their phone works because they're just happen to be in the right spot to where, you know, they might get signal, they might not. That's the limitation of the technology, but also the fact that, you know, you don't have a big honking antenna sticking out of your cell phone anymore. And, you know, it's just it's the frequency doesn't need a big antenna, but that also means it doesn't go as far and it doesn't penetrate through thick layers of stuff. You know, it's more line of sight. So, you know, this is where you see all that stuff about, oh, look, here's a cell phone antenna and they've got it hidden as a tree or in a church steeple or, you know, they hide them all over the effing place because that's what you have to do. Then they all have connections back to whatever backbone through more other links, whether it's a microwave link or another radio link or you know, some form of hard line. But, you know, the cell phone, basically every emergency cell phone service is one of the first things that goes out. So, you know, yeah, saying, you know, I got my emergency alert test on the cell phone's great, but I mean, even just a simple power outage, I've seen the cell phone service get real spotty.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter that you can get the test. It's in the hurricane, in Hurricane Andrew, how many people got their updates from their cell phone and how many people got their updates from their emergency weather radio they had stashed in the closet for when a hurricane hits? That's the study they need to look at when determining whether it's worth killing AM radio.
But AM radio doesn't necessarily need to be the only, you know, a lot of people get their alerts via, you know, they'll get them on TV because the TV is what's on, not the radio. Or they'll get them over FM radio. They usually play them there too. So it's just that AM radio is one of the ones that still gets a lot of government funding for the emergency management systems. I don't know.
Well, that's because I think they were the first on the board.
That's probably part of it. It's one of these things, and of course I've been doing the amateur radio stuff, so I've looked into a lot of this stuff, and there's some really cool videos out there touring AM stations and showing some of the emergency management stuff. And I think it was a Jeff Geerling video. It's like an hour long where they're touring an AM radio station, and it's you know, if you know a little bit about radio, it's fascinating. They were showing one of the cages for the giant ass transmitter they use for AM. So it's actually an interesting point they make in it, that when they broadcast FM, the antenna is on top of a tower. When they broadcast AM, the antenna is the tower. So it's some interesting stuff there, but you know, that is one of the upshots, is that AM is such a simple technology that it's in fucking everything. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe that is a question of, maybe we do need to look at modernizing. Because here's the next thing. Well, what if we took all these resources for the emergency management system, and instead of going over AM and point-to-point FM links, if they put that kind of resources into, you know, putting the disaster recovery and the fault tolerance into the cell phone networks, would that be better? Maybe. I don't know. So, anyways.
Next up,
unless RU, you have a thought.
No, I don't have an opinion on that one.
All right. United Health says hackers potentially stole a third of Americans' data. That's from Reuters. So, hackers who breached United Health's tech unit in February potentially stole a third of Americans' data. And they do mean as in the population of America, a third of them. The largest U.S. health insurer CEO told the Congressional Committee on Wednesday. Two congressional panels grilled CEO Andrew Witty about the cyber attack on the company's Change Healthcare unit, which processes about half of all medical claims in the U.S. The breach has caused widespread disruptions in claims processing, impacting patients and providers across the country. Witty fielded heated questions from senators on the House Emergency and Commerce Committee about the company's failure to prevent the breach and contain its fallout. Pressed for details on the data compromised, Witty said, quote, maybe a third, unquote, of Americans' protected health information and potentially identifiable information was stolen, quote. We continue to investigate the amount of data here, unquote. He added, quote, We do think it's going to be substantial, unquote. The cyber criminal gang Alpha V hacked into Change on February the 12th using stolen login credentials on an older server that did not have multi-factor authentication, Witty said. Quote, it was a platform which had only recently become part of the company and was being in the process of being upgraded, unquote, Witty said, referring to United Health's $13 billion acquisition of Change in 2022. Oh, that's the old story. Oh, yeah, recent acquisition. Hadn't gotten it on yet, although it's only a year old. A lot of other acquisition networks hang around a lot longer. Just saying. The platform also did not have the security measures prescribed in a joint alert issued by the FBI and U.S. cyber and health officials in December of 2023 to specifically warn about Alpha V or Black Cat targeting healthcare organizations. United Health paid the gang around $22 million in Bitcoin as ransom, Witte said, adding that, however, there was no guarantee that the breach data was secure and so could not be leaked. Another hacking group claiming to be an offshoot of Alpha V said last month it also had a copy of the data, although the company has not verified the claim. And it's like, hey, you're giving out money. That's exactly what that is. The Senate Finance Panel probed the outsized influence of United Health, which has a market cap of $445 billion and an annual revenue of $372 billion on American healthcare. But Witte said the company's problems were not a threat to the broader economy. Senator Bill Cassidy said senators on the panel, quote, would have to ask, is the dominant role of United too dominant because it is into everything and messing up United messes up everybody, unquote. Quote, my point is the size of United becomes an almost it's too big to fail, and sure, because if it fails, it's going to bring down far more than it ordinarily would, unquote, Cassidy said. Witte said in response, quote, I don't believe it is because actually dependent on our size, for example, we have no hospitals in America, we do not own any drug manufacturers, unquote. Yet change processes medical claims around 900,000 physicians, 33,000 pharmacies, 5,500 hospitals, and 600 laboratories in the U.S. U.S. military members' data was also stolen in the hack, Witte revealed, without saying how many of them were impacted. Senate Finance Committee Chairman Ron Wyden called another one of these assholes. Same names keep popping up in all the stories this week. Called the hack a national security threat. Quote, I believe the bigger the company, the bigger the responsibility to protect its systems from hackers. UHG was a big target long before it was hacked, unquote, he added. Quote, United Health Group has not revealed how many patients' private medical records were stolen, how many providers went without reimbursement, how many seniors are unable to pick up their prescriptions as a result of the hack, unquote, what said Wyden. In letters to both congressional committees, the American Hospital Association said an internal survey of its members found that 94% of hospitals report damage to its cash flow, and more than half reported significant or serious financial damage to change inability to process claims. Similarly, 90% of respondents to an American Medical Association survey of doctors said they continue to lose revenue because of the hack, according to the group's written testimony of the Senate Finance Committee. So, we need to revise the whole monopoly laws to include simply owning a percentage of the market because it makes it, that's now a vulnerability that an incident, in this case cyber attack, but an incident, I mean, look at the damage this one thing is doing.
I think the Sherman Antitrust Act would still let them break that up. Don't ever use it.
So, I don't know. I feel like when, if you ever have a company that's on the cusp of too big to fail, they need to start looking at it for antitrust and try to break it up. If nothing else, just to keep things resilient. You know, not even from a whole competition standpoint, just from a, we don't have the entire economy, you know, the entire segment of an industry dependent on one company's janitor not tripping on the fucking power cord, right?
Yeah, I think if any senator uses the phrase too big to fail, that's a, hi, I just voted to open up an antitrust action against them. Let's look into this. Just because one's opened, it doesn't mean it goes through, but they at least need to open it.
So, and they said what happened here was, you know, United acquired Change, and now they were processing, you know, half of all medical claims in the country, right, between these two companies. They said, oh, it's an older server without MFA with a stolen credential. Great. So you had an unpatched server, an old box, somebody in the corner, probably nobody knew what the fuck it did. I've seen this so many times. It's like, yeah, well, our integration budget was only for 6 months. It took longer than that. So we left it as it was. But it's not done. You didn't actually finish the job. Yeah, but the budget ran out.
But that's you clicking, you accept on all those risks. You were willfully blind. Here's your fine.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So, man, if people knew just how rickety most of these networks that, you know, people really depend on are,
Don't tell them, Morps.
I don't think people realize how few networks are banned. They think, okay, this is a company. They probably had this as part of their, part of their plan when they set it up. It's like, oh, the company never plans their network. Like, this is what I need now. So that's what they build the network for. Then every additional need is just tacked onto it. And no one gives a fuck.
That is an architectural design. It has an official name in architectural language when it comes to systems design. It's called Big Ball of Mud.
I was thinking spaghetti. But yeah, everything. I'm thinking almost every company, unless it is a software company, perhaps, or a computer company that this is our job, I think every network is a big ball of mud.
You'd be surprised how many computer networks or networks of companies where this is our job are still big balls of mud. Because you have to understand, with these systems, they're usually not planned. They're grown. It's like Madman was saying, this is what I need today. How do I get it in as quickly and cheaply as possible? Okay, slap it in there. Next, slap it in there. And it's not until these companies have this kind of a breach that somebody goes back and says, why the fuck weren't you designing it properly to security standards? And they're like, because you wouldn't fund it. Of course, management doesn't like hearing that because that means management made the mistake, and that can't be right. So they fire that guy and then bring in a security company to come in and fix it, and they spend stupid amounts of money redesigning existing networks. And then within 5 years, it's all thrown out because they keep tacking new shit on, and all that security stuff's just in the way. So,
and as new technology comes out, they may just tack that on to the end, and the old shit doesn't go away because it's still being used for something.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I have some applications that it specifically says use this or it doesn't work. Those are fewer and fewer, but yeah, they still exist.
Not the next article, although the next article is bashing on Microsoft. The article after that, we'll talk about legacy systems floating around here. So, I feel terrible for anybody whose data was stolen. I have no sympathy for United Health. I've seen big companies do this shit too many times to, you know, it's like, I'm sorry, you do this to yourselves. It's like, I understand you want to be nimble, I understand you want to make money, but you can't. The Chinese have been figuring out why you don't cost cut when you're doing your architectural design and your building materials, because they're having apartment buildings collapse. We're learning why you don't do it with computer networks, because we're getting hacked all the fucking time. How long is this going to take to get fixed? I don't know. It might just have to be a new generation of people who understand that shit matters. You can't just slap it in because it's cheap and it happens to work. You have to architect this stuff.
5 more years, all the boomers should be dead.
Really?
And then 10 years after that, things will start getting fixed.
Okay, well, hold your breath for 15 years.
Yeah, that's how long if it's a generational thing, you got to think, what generation grew up knowledgeable enough about computers to be scared the shit out of it and able to fix it? That would be
ours.
Our generation. So everyone of the previous generations that can say no have to be out of the system before we can try to fix it.
Yeah, hopefully it's not just a generational thing. I think that's part of it, though.
So what happens when the X's move on? Because I know the generation after them don't know shit about shit.
You ever see the movie Idiocracy?
Oh, yeah. I've been playing the home game for years, haven't you?
I mean, you know, it's like, you know, water? You mean like from the toilet? Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of that, or it's going to be like 40K, where the tech priests, you know, sacrifice people to the engines because they don't understand. They don't know why it works, they just know that it works, you know.
I lost a lot of hope when I figured out that They didn't realize you don't have to open a new window to have another tab when using a computer.
When I, at a previous job, we had a guy who had the most asinine method of managing the files on his hard drive. Because I don't know why, but he had decided that just using Explorer was not the correct way to do things. So when he wanted to make directories and move files around, he opened Microsoft Word, did Save As, and did all of it in the Save dialog box, which technically you can do. You've been able to do that since Windows XP. But fucking why? So
Who knows, man?
I don't know. It's going to be shit like that. It's going to be, they don't know why it works, but it works. So they keep doing it.
You keep hearing this shit. Oh, the most tech literate generation ever. I'm like, fuck off.
No, that was us. We had to make it work.
Exactly. Fuck.
I've wrote basic code on a Commodore 64. Thank you very much.
I mean, just because you can whip around with your thumbs on a phone doesn't make you proficient in tech. In tech stuff,
it makes you proficient at running an app. But what happens when the app doesn't work? I don't know. Turn it off. Turn it back on again. Okay, that didn't work. Now what? I don't know.
Like, yeah, I don't have much faith. Let's just say that. Yeah, there's you're gonna be your obscure couple of kids that are really into tech, but I mean, the average person has got no fucking clue.
And I'm going to point out the average person has never had a clue. It's always been those obscure few kids that are into tech.
Stop telling me I'm weird, madman. Like,
I mean, it's like the automobile. A lot of people, they turn the key, it starts. That's as much of the knowledge they have on the car. There's very few people I know that know how to do maintenance, and fewer that know to do it regularly. Like, of my siblings, I think I'm the only one that's actually changed the oil in a car and did a tune-up on a car. And I did that because I was broke. Otherwise, I would have paid somebody else to do it.
That's why I got into cars. I was broke.
That was the joke I was getting ready to make. It's like, I know how to do it. I just don't like to. I'd pay somebody else to do that shit.
That's the same. Like, I built one computer. No, that's not my thing. I'll get other people to do it for me. But not knowing basic mechanical skills just...
Yeah, and I'm pointing out that since we've moved away from an agricultural society, we've lost more of those skills because we haven't needed them. When we were an agricultural society, we had to know everything because there wasn't that many people around you could ask for help. Now we've become super specialized. So I don't need to know how my computer works. I've got tech support for that. I don't need to know how my car works. I've got 12 mechanics in the area, 3 within walking distance. They'll fix my car.
God help us if there's an economic collapse.
Would it be like the South Park thing where the handymen were rich?
Oh, fuck, I'm going to be a millionaire, dude. It'd be great.
It's like, but you do need to know how your electrical system works because that's how you commit insurance.
You need to look into that stuff, man. And if you can map what circuits in your house blow what fuses and what appliance you have to have on to do so, all the more help.
Madman, we're going to have to check your panel next time I'm in the town. It's not that funny.
At least Madman's made his house squatter proof. Like, the squatter will be in there for like 5 minutes going, nah, I'm not dying in a fire. I'm out.
Well, yeah, but that's just because he has a flamethrower mounted on a pit bull that he keeps in the backyard.
Hey, I'm not going to spend the money on a robot when you can get a stray and a super soaker filled with kerosene and a lighter for super cheap.
Yeah, well, what we're not telling you is that the pit bull is the second attempt. That poor, poor Shih Tzu. Anyways.
It deserved to die. It was a Shih Tzu. back down there with those fucking Mexican yipping rats. They were only bred to laugh at and kill.
Well, yeah, but the thing couldn't even run with the Super Soaker Ty did. It was just, you know, the Super Soaker laying on the ground and laying, you know, dragging it around, making those pathetic noises. I'm going to stop this joke and move on to the next story, because otherwise we're going to sit here and make fun of goofy dogs.
Oh, yeah, we're going to be like some governors that should have kept their fucking mouths shut.
About shooting the dog.
And she was right. I have no problem with her shooting the dog. And I know in today's society you don't fucking put that in your book. There are too many wimpy, whiny-ass people that think dogs are people. They're not. They're fucking dogs.
Yeah, they're better than people.
And you can shoot them whenever you're bored or whenever you want, you know, strange entertainment. So long as you own the dog, you do whatever the fuck you want with it, other than fuck it. That's wrong. But you can shoot it. You can shoot it and be completely fine.
Madman, I think you need to speak with your priest. I'm just going to say
that. Wow. I'm fairly certain he's going to agree with both of those things. At least that first one. Because if I find a priest that says it's okay to fuck a dog, there's two things getting shot. A dog and a priest.
God. Next article is from Bleeping Computer. Microsoft has confirmed that the April 2024 Windows security updates breaks VPN connections across client and server platforms. The company explains on the Windows Health dashboard that, quote, Windows devices might face VPN connection failures after installing the April of 2024 security update or the April 2024 non-security preview update, unquote. Quote, we are investigating user reports and will provide more information in the coming days, unquote, Redmond added. The list of affected Windows versions includes Windows 11, Windows 10, Windows Server 2008, and later. The complete list of affected Windows versions and problematic security updates, they've got a whole bunch of the Microsoft KB articles, several versions of Windows 11, Windows A version of Windows 10, a bunch of versions of Server there. While Microsoft has yet to provide the root cause behind the VPN failures, it advised home users to use the Windows Get Help app if they need support with their personal or family accounts. It also said that small business and large enterprise customers who require help should reach out via the dedicated support for business portal. While there is no workaround for this issue on affected systems until Microsoft provides a fix, you can uninstall the security update to temporarily address the VPN problems. Quote, to remove the LCU after installing the combined SSU and LCU package, use the DISM remove package command line option with the LCU package name as the argument. You can find the package name by using this command, DSM/online/get packages, unquote, Microsoft said. Wow, that's the only fix, is to go into the fucking DISM and remove the package that way. And here's the fun part. Because Windows updates are no longer optional in the latest versions of the OS, in a few weeks it's going to reinstall the broken package. So,
we had a problem. We couldn't see everything on your network, so we had to break it.
Yeah,
am I being too cynical, or is that?
No, that's
about
it.
What happened?
Yeah. So that's the problem with the forced updates, is that when they put out a bad one, you're fucked. Because, and this goes back to what we were saying the other day, Microsoft got the Windows operating system pretty much nailed at Windows 7, and all they've been doing that ever since is gluing shit on the side of it, and they've only made it worse. So, like, the actual kernel of the OS hasn't changed that much. The actual, you know, underlying system, okay, yeah, they've been doing some rewrites and some different parts of the GUI and things like that, but the actual kernel hasn't changed that much, but here we are. So, last article I have for tonight, RU sent me this one. It's from the BBC. Qantas had a pretty good fuck-up, and I can pretty much explain this one, although we're going to be short on time. Australian airline Qantas says it's investigating a privacy breach on its app that left customers access to other users' personal details. Some users reported seeing several boarding passes and flight details belonging to strangers, including their names and frequent flyer information. Qantas says it fixed the problem about 3 hours after it was discovered and apologized to customers, quote, there was no indication of a cybersecurity incident, unquote. Quote, current investigations indicate that it was caused by a technology issue that may have been related to a recent systems change, unquote, it said in a statement on Wednesday. Earlier, it had urged those affected to, quote, please be aware of social media scams at this time, unquote. Customer Josh Withers told ABC that another passenger's name and details appeared when he opened the app on Wednesday. It said, hi, Sam. I instantly noticed that Sam had a lot more Qantas points than I did, he said. Mr. Withers said that each time he reopened the portal, a new customer's details would appear, including their frequent flyer points and scheduled flights. Other passengers told local media they appeared to have ability to cancel other passengers' upcoming flight to Europe. Speaking to Nine News, technology journalist Trevor Long said that in the space of 15 minutes, he could capture at least 8 to 12 different people's details, including valid boarding passes. The airline has recommended that users log out and then log back into the app to try to fix the issue. It said it was not aware of any customers traveling with incorrect boarding passes. Social media has been flooded with criticism of the carrier in the post of the people claiming to be affected. Users on X shared screenshots of the glitch and alleged phishing attempts. Some appeared to show accounts posting as Qantas customer care agents asking for people's personal information in order to assist them. Oh, boy. So just to explain a little bit here, we were talking earlier about old systems and new systems. So airlines largely still have to use a mainframe-based system to book their flights. And that's because that's what a lot of the, FAA and a lot of the government systems that manage the flights and their different systems all still hook into some... Well, they hook into computers that were all designed in the 80s, basically. That's why that airline, when you go up to the ticket counter, the airline is doing a lot of typing because they're still using those legacy systems in a lot of cases. But what a lot of them have done to be able to support things like mobile apps and website interfaces and things like that is they've essentially written screen scrapers that connect to the old terminal programs and just pretend to be, basically the program pretends to be somebody typing really, really fast, and then it just scrapes the text output to get the information it needs and return that. So it's kind of like instead of just a web app straight calling a database, it's a web app calling the screen scraper that then goes and interfaces with the back-end mainframe system to pull the data it needs and then return it. So it's, a few more steps in the chain there. And since he had people pulling other users' information, what most likely happened was either an update in their screen scraping portion. I mean, it might be a couple of different ways of doing it, or something in their user identification got messed up. And so that linkage between the customer who signed into the website or the app and the customer's data it's pulling out of the back-end system was somehow broken. And I think that's why you were seeing the wrong person's information. At least that's the more interesting way. The other way it could have been is they could have just fucked up a database call somewhere and just getting random information that way. But, the fancy systems people build on top of these legacy systems to keep using the old shit rather than just replace it is amazing.
You have no idea how much I spent on that old shit.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's paid itself off yet.
Fully depreciated, still in use. I mean, depreciated as in accounting. Well, actually, both meanings of the word in this case, now that I think about it. Anyways. You guys have anything on that?
I was just thinking, the amount of money businesses used to spend on infrastructure that would last forever, that really got effed up when it came to the computing revolution, just on how fast it changes.
Yep, sure did. Well, we're hitting near the limits of silicon as far as speed goes. So we'll either start seeing moves to new computing platforms, things like ARM or what Apple's doing, or Microsoft, I think, is getting ready to put out some laptops with Snapdragon chips in them. So you either start seeing the move away from x86 to other platforms to try to get more performance, or will just accept that we've hit a performance plateau, and they'll start trying to do other things with software. So that could be interesting either way. But let's move on to this. What I have for you tonight in Digital Dojo is actually something I was looking for a long time and then kind of stumbled across it the other day. And I was just like, oh, shit, that's what I was looking for originally. This is an interface on top of OpenSCAD or OpenSCAD. It's called the OpenSCAD Graph Editor. So for anybody who's messed around in, say, Blender or some of the other programs that let you do these linked nodes, a lot of programming languages call that a graph. This lets you build OpenSCAD models by dragging the node into the graph workflow and then linking them up and doing your values that way, which anybody who's ever worked with OpenSCAD very much, you can end up with some really dense code very quickly from the way you have to join different assemblies to make parts in OpenSCAD. So this is just a different way of representing that OpenSCAD code, and I think it's a particularly useful one, and it's probably going to get me re-exploring OpenSCAD for modeling for 3D prints, because the last time I looked for something like this, I hadn't found it, and when I came across this thing, and not only did I find it, I found one that looks moderately mature. So it's like, heck yeah. So anyways, that's of course all I got for tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. Unless, things are on fire again, like last week. The Galaxy Fusion Radio site, in the BBS, in the IRC tonight, Alhazard, Psychros, Madman, myself, RU, Sardonyx, and She. Of course, don't forget about the BBS. It is back up and running. I don't know exactly how long it was down, but I got it fixed. The weird thing where, for some reason, the lock file was still locked, so the script that's supposed to keep it running thought it was running when it wasn't. Anyways, that's all sorted out. Madman, closing thoughts.
The thing slowing down with computer development, I wonder if that will finally innovate a lot of businesses to upgrade, since it's going to last them a while.
Possibly. I don't know that things are going to slow down with computer development. I just know that they're kind of starting to hit the speed limits of what's practical with x86 architecture. Because they're basically starting to hit the speed of silicon. The problems they're running into is with making faster chips now are physics, not chip design. So the nanometer stuff is getting small enough. Like the 4-nanometer chips, if you go much smaller than that, quantum becomes a problem. You know what I mean? So anyways, are you closing thoughts?
I don't really have any for this week, folks.
I'm still deciding whether or not the electron exists.
Iron electrician, madman. That's my thought of the week.
All right. Let's play some sound effects. Thank
you for your continuing patience during this transitional zombie apocalypse. Your satisfaction is very important to us.
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm kind of retarded.
Man, I'm sorry about this. I hope this doesn't ruin your day.